Brazilian music is back in its righteous place on WPFW. I'm your host, Roberto, and Berimbau airs on Sundays, 8 to 10 p.m. Are you ready to take a trip from Rio Grande do Sul to Amazon and back? That's Berimbau, Sundays, 8 to 10 p.m. on WPFW. Building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Expansions joins WPFW Tuesday, August the 13th at 2 a.m. Hosted by veteran broadcaster Vince Brown, Expansions will feature dance music from around the world, including funk, disco, rock, and world music from the 1970s through the 1990s. Before ending the journey, we'll feature the sounds of jazz, both funky and straight ahead. Expansions will be a welcome journey for WPFW listeners every Tuesday from 2 to 5 a.m.
Watching comments, dialing in from California, incredible redwoods of California. It's great to be with you. Sorry for the delay. We've had a little bit of internet problems here. These are crazy, crazy times, needless to say. And it's great to be with you on Community Watching Comment, the Tuesday edition, and we are with you from the crazy redwoods of Northern California. It's wonderful to be with you, and we are going to have a wonderful guest with you, Norman Solomon, the activist, author, journalist, and generally a good guy. Good to be with you. And we are in fundraising mode. I think you can say that we at WPFW FM Pacifica Radio for the Washington, D.C. area bring you a certain kind of angle on the news that you don't get anywhere else. Are you with me, Ray Valencia? Maybe she's not. It's really good to be with you.
Good morning. I am here.
Good morning. Here.
Of course
I'm
here.
Us, Norman?
Yes, I am. Thanks so much.
Wonderful. And we are, as I said, bringing you a certain kind of edge, a certain kind of journalism. We've been with you in the D.C. area for 47 years. Pacifica started in 1949, and it's Pacifica. It's pacifism. It started in 1949 in reaction to the Korean War, back before most of us were born. An alternative radio, a listener sponsor. We are the model that NPR and PBS picked up on of listener-sponsored radio. It's extremely important. You are not inundated with commercials. We do come to you occasionally for financial support. We're listener-sponsored. We need your help, particularly right now. WPFW is looking to alter its a station location from K Street, and we particularly need your support right now. So please go to your website and make the donation that makes a difference. WPFWFM.org. You can also call in 202-588-9739. 202-588-9739. Make the call that makes a difference. It really does make a difference, folks. We are in serious straits, need to get out of our current location, and need your help in doing so. We have a $600 goal, so please chime in and give us the support that we need. You can do credit card or PayPal or debit card by going to WPFWFM.org. Anything to say, Miss Valencia, before we go to our esteemed guest?
Now is the time. We don't really pester you too much throughout the year, but now is the time. This is why we don't have commercials on the radio. You're getting a lot of full content each show because we don't have commercial breaks. But every once in a while, we need to call you in to make a small donation to the station so we can keep going. We have salaries to meet. We need to keep the lights on. We have this major move coming up. And we really do want to continue to bring those news stories that are important to you each week here on Community Watch and Comment.
There you are, and we go to our esteemed guest, Norman Ornstein, and let me get to my notes here. We're out in the woods in California, so a little bit of delay here, and I appreciate your patience. We're speaking now with Norman Ornstein. He's the National Director of RootsAction.org, and Executive Director of the Institute for Public Accuracy, a very important organization that directs us towards issues of great concern to our community. He's the author of many books, including War Made Easy, his latest book, War Made Invisible, How America Hides the Human Toll of Its Military Machine. It was published in 2023 by the New Press, a paperback edition with a new afterword about the Gaza War will come out next month. And we're going to come back to talk about that. Norman Ornstein, welcome to Community Watch and Comment.
Well, David, I'm very glad to be here. I should say that I am not now, nor have I ever been, Norman Ornstein. So your mention of Norman Ornstein is from a different galaxy and a different planet, really. I can understand why you would be familiar with the name Norman Ornstein. He's been a political pundit for corporate politics for decades, but I definitely am not in close proximity to him.
Ornstein, Sullivan. What's the difference? Oh, my goodness. My apologies. You know, relatively speaking, Norman Ornstein is a mainstream kind of guy that Al Franken alerted me to, and my apologies.
Well, that's okay. He would probably be as offended as you. He used to be quite right-wing, actually, or at least leaning right. He has seen the fruits of the poisonous Republican politics evolve over the years. He's no longer so reactionary, or
my apologies.
Not so complacent as he used to be.
He was on a wonderful show on NPR in 1992 when they did a April Fool's joke that Richard Nixon was running for president again, but that's a whole nother story. So let's get to the issue at hand, which is, there's just, we have this, I don't want to say it's an illusion. It's obviously, a very serious election coming up in November. There's no question, but there are going to be a lot of issues remaining after November 5th, and I think one could say one of the most daunting is the military-industrial complex, or as Eisenhower, who coined the phrase military-industrial, wanted to say military-industrial-congressional complex when he gave his famous speech in 1960, but his aides had him drop the congressional element. But regardless, talk about what's going to remain no matter who is president after the upcoming election. And it's daunting. There's something like 5 military-industrial complex lobbyists for every single member of Congress. I mean, it's overwhelming. You could talk about Norman Solomon, not Norman Ornstein. My apologies.
Well, as you say, David, no matter who becomes president next January, there'll be death taxes, and at least for the foreseeable future, a very powerful, what Eisenhower called, military-industrial complex still with us. And it's notable that while we hear a lot about various problems in the United States in mainstream media, very rarely is there mention of a present-day military-industrial complex. It reminds me of the constant or frequent refrain in U.S. media about Russian oligarchs, and there certainly are Russian oligarchs. We almost never hear any reference to what corporate mainstream media could call American oligarchs, U.S. oligarchs. And so we have this imbalance where the coverage of various other countries might be critical appropriately and accurately or not, but turning the mirror on ourselves, on our own society, becomes very difficult to discern when you're talking about, yes, corporate media or corporate-friendly media such as NPR and PBS. The reality is that we have a continually rising in recent years military budget, close to $1 trillion with a T dollars just for the Pentagon, which doesn't include some nuclear weapons expenditures, other consequential costs because of these wars that have continued really nonstop since 9/11. It's a myth that there is no longer
Hey friends, we are back again. Mark your calendars. On Saturday, August the 24th, WPFW will host the 15th annual Blues Festival featuring Clarence the Blues Man Turner, Jim Bennett with Jesse Terrell, Stacy Brooks, Low Rent Quartet, Reggie Right Eye, and the Missing Pieces, all at Lamont's Entertainment Complex, 4400 Livingston Road in Indian Head, Maryland. Event time is from 12 p.m. to 6 p.m. For more information, go to eventbrite.com and search WPFW. Why, you ask? Because WPFW is building a better world, one broadcast at a time. Believe that.
Shalimar, War and Too Short. Come to Bethesda Theater in the month of August. More information at BethesdaTheater.com.
WPFW is looking for volunteers to answer phones and enter donor information during our summer membership drive beginning August 11th through August 24th. Phone volunteering is a fun way of meeting new people and possibly your favorite programmers while also supporting the station. Need community service hours? Phone volunteering is the perfect solution. Contact us at volunteers@wpfw.org. or leave a voice message at 202-588-0999, extension 1008. That's volunteers@wpfw.org or 202-588-0999, extension 1008.
Oh, okay. Well, I think that we have a context here where, as you mentioned, there's an important election coming up. And certainly with domestic policies, there are profound differences that do exist between Trump and Harris. And it would be, I think, foolish to pretend otherwise, whether it's civil rights or LGBTQ rights, whether it is aid to low-income people, environmental protection, denial of climate, and so many other factors. It's really crucial that people recognize the difference between the two candidates. When it gets to foreign policy, not so much. As a matter of fact, it's very difficult in many cases to see a difference between Harris and Trump. The rhetoric might be different. The militarism is actually quite similar. And while we are very aware of language, it's really policy that matters. And the ongoing atrocities in Gaza that are subsidized and made possible quite literally by the US government are often taken off the front page because of other news and because, frankly, denial from so much of the, as we talked about, not only military-industrial complex, but the media complex, the military-industrial media complex, as we might describe it, where there's an ongoing refusal to recognize what is continuing, what is continuing, which is the reality that upwards of 80% of the weapons being utilized by the Israeli government to slaughter children, women, other civilians in Gaza, more than four-fifths of those weapons are provided by the U.S. government to the Israeli military, the Orwellian-named Israel Defense Forces. And I think this is a moral, political, ethical crisis that the United States and the political culture are immersed in right now. And we're going to see the manifestations, or at least one of the indicators and reflections of that next week in Chicago during the Democratic National Convention, where people will be outside of the amphitheater protesting the U.S. direct complicity in the mass murder going on and genocide going on in Gaza.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I a couple of thoughts come to mind. You know, we talk about the U.S. defense budget. It was called the War Department, I believe, until the end of World War II, and yes. Now we're calling it defense, and it's offense. You know, it's quite egregious. I guess, you know, when you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So, you know, you've got what, five war manufacturers, lobbyists for every congressman, I believe, in our Congress. And there's, you know, a tendency, be it Ukraine, be it Gaza, be it wherever, to up our quote unquote defense budget to counter it. And there's, you know, there's no peace department in our cabinet. I mean, it's really quite egregious, and the horror that is going on in Gaza is quite egregious. And you know, we nixed a golden opportunity, particularly in hindsight, to stop the Ukraine war early on a couple of years ago. We didn't do it, and you have to think that the fact that our Lockheed Martin et al. Are making a big buck by supporting our quote-unquote defense department.
Making a killing, literally and figuratively, the amount of profits that are taken are just stunning when you consider, and this has been going on for decades and got a spike upwards after 9/11, you consider that it's a panoply of U.S. agencies, the CIA, which was involved in the drone program, the Pentagon, alphabet soup of agencies that are continuing to be in search of enemies. And if they can't find them, they create them. And it became pretty clear that as the so-called war on terror continued, that it was going to be difficult to justify the extent of expenditures that were desired when, after all, the horrors inflicted on 9/11 were basically implemented by stealth and box cutters. And the need to create, identify, vilify enemies that were, we were told, requiring aerospace billion-dollar projects, increasing in the Orwellian term modernization, with the $2 trillion planned outlay for nuclear weapons. This is what Daniel Ellsberg, in his last and very brilliant and chilling book, The Doomsday Machine, described, that you have a pattern of madness that is driven by the military-industrial nuclear weapons complex. And the net result is that there's never enough development of nuclear weapons. And I think it was quite notable that after the invasion of Ukraine 2.5 years ago, when President Biden, days later, gave his first speech as president to the Congress, a State of the Union address, he, in more than 6,000 words, as I remember, he devoted a lot of those words to denouncing Russia, which, fair enough, the invasion was horrible and is horrible, just as the U.S. invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan and other countries have been. But in that speech, no mention of nuclear weapons, nuclear war, the dangers of nuclear holocaust. And it's really, I think, such a silence that screams out. It's a form of propaganda to be silent about the dangers of nuclear war, which the United States is accentuating. And really, this is about everything, quite literally. There will be nothing spared if nuclear war takes place. And yet, very little mention of this from official Washington as it joins with Russia in escalating the nuclear arms race.
Yeah, I mean, it just occurs to me, speaking of nuclear war, you know, I mean, it's a whole nother discussion. But, you know, the dropping of the bombs on Japan, you know, we're told that it was done in order to save American troops from having to invade Japan. I mean, it's a red herring. It's a canard, if you will, and driven by the need, you know, we wanted to test these weapons. And the invasion wasn't scheduled till November. It's a whole nother discussion, but I think the main point that we're talking about is that we have this extraordinary need to fuel the military industrial congressional complex, and it's an imperative that is not discussed enough. We do discuss it here on WPFW, and we're going to take a little break. I'm joined by my esteemed co-host Ray Valencia, and we do talk about, you know, this hidden imperative of the military industrial and, as I wanted to say, congressional complex that is driven to see everything as a nail and use our hammer. Because it makes certain people quite wealthy. Your thoughts, Ray Valencia?
Well, as I'm listening to Norman Solomon talk about the military-industrial complex and how, you know, the press is not really emphasizing the impact of the, you know, you have a missile, so I'll buy two. So there's no more mutually assured destruction. It's just like, well, I'm going to buy more missiles, and then you buy more missiles. And then hopefully we have a detente. And it seems like now we have an escalation. So this is why stations such as WPFW FM are so important to keep on the dial. We are all community stakeholders. This is your community. This is your community radio. This is your opportunity to listen to voices such as Norman Solomon talk about the dangers that we face on the foreign affairs front going forward, regardless of election outcomes and what that means for Americans, right? And so as stakeholders, it's important for us to support the medium that's going to bring us the information that you can make as an informed citizen. And that's really important because you're not getting a corporate angle. This isn't a corporation like Ford Motor Company or some company like that that has a big sponsorship on the TV channel, and that's why you're watching their ad. We are here to bring you stories that are not getting enough attention. We are here to share with you an angles and historical context, I think, is really important. And that has really been the tradition of WPFW. And I encourage all of you to help us meet our goal. Come to WPFWFM.org. Make that donation today. I know Right now, we're all confronted with financial challenges. We're all living with budgets with higher inflation. Please become a sustainer. You could take your donation, and it's small amounts throughout the year. That would mean so much to us. For the cost of that smoothie that you buy each morning or the latte in the afternoon, you can help make a profound difference and help join us in this community effort. Thank you so much for your time and your attention. It's been such a pleasure to be a programmer here and to work in this community.
Thank you, Ray. I mean, it's just so important. We're offering a different model here. I know it's not all that fun for us to come with you with these fundraisers, but you're getting it in the alternative to being inundated with commercials. I mean, capitalism is just eating up our culture. I watched a little bit of regular TV the other night, and it's atrocious the money interests are eating into our culture. We don't do that with our listeners at WPFW, but we do come to you with our original model of listener-sponsored radio and television, and we are asking for your support. So please chime in and support, I think, a very important community media resource that is WPFW. You can go online, wpfwfm.org. We do PayPal, or your credit card sustainers are absolutely welcome. Whatever you can give, no amount is too large, no amount is too small. You can also call in 202-588-9739. That 202-588-9739. We have a $500 goal. We're nowhere near it, folks. Please support, I think, this important program, but more importantly, WPFW. We're looking to move, and we need your help right now. And back to our esteemed guest, in a way, Norman, not Ornstein, but oh my goodness. It could have been a worse mistake. I kind of like Norman Ornstein, but I'd rather have Norman Solomon with us, and he is, in fact, with us. Let's talk about money and politics. It's very serious. I mean, one of the big kernels of shall we say, truth that I learned going to UC Berkeley is that in capitalism, wealth tends to concentrate. And I think that's clearly true, and it evidences itself in our politics. You know, our Supreme Court has allowed money to completely inundate our political system, and one of the ways that it's doing it, Norman Solomon, is evidence with AIPAC, the Israeli. What American Israeli Political Action Committee, and they have run out of town. A wonderful congressman from New York, Congressman Bowman, and recently, a few days ago, Cori Bush, congresswoman from St. Louis. If you could just talk about Norman Solomon, that's one example of the effect of. Of politics, of money in our political system.
There is a perverse and grotesque logic to what has been unfolding. And as you were speaking, David, I was thinking that any adult listening to our conversation right now has lived in their lifetimes over a span where the concentration of wealth and power has escalated greatly. And if you go back to 1968, for instance, people might remember that afterwards, a journalist named, I believe it was Joe McGinnis, wrote a book called The Selling of the President, 1968. And on the cover of the book was a pack of cigarettes graphic with Nixon, Richard Nixon's picture on it. That was shocking to people back then, that more and more were presidential candidates marketed like just commercial products. Well, that's way old hat by now. We're just far, vastly beyond that, where the concentrations of capital have escalated so greatly, have become at such astronomical financial levels, the dollar amounts, that elections are being bought extremely flagrantly. And as you mentioned, just several weeks ago, Jamal Bowman, after two terms in Congress, was basically run out of his district in the Bronx and Westchester County in New York by massive expenditures of money by AIPAC, the Israel Can Do No Wrong lobby, that had jumped into the electoral fray only in the last couple of years directly. And so there was an announcement several months ago that AIPAC intended to spend $100 million to oust progressive candidates, people for the most part in Congress right now, some of the squad members, who actually support the human rights of Palestinian people. And to AIPAC and their allies, that is abhorrent. The ethnocentrism, the racism, the Israeli-Jewish nationalism, fueling this eagerness to take money and shovel huge quantities of it to throw it into congressional races. So we were seeing $10, $15 million and upwards spent to oust Jamal Bowman, similar amounts spent in recent weeks to successfully oust Cori Bush, a very courageous member of Congress who was the sponsor of a ceasefire resolution to apply to Israel and Gaza just weeks after the atrocity of October 7th. And it's not only that no deed went unpunished, it was very good deeds that were massively punished by the expenditure of money, such a vast amount. Today, as we speak, there's an election in Minnesota, and Ilhan Omar, another courageous member of the squad, is facing re-election. The polling is looking fairly optimistic for her to be returned to the House of Representatives. This is going to be an ongoing battle. And I think it's notable that the fear of crossing Israel as it continues to slaughter people in Gaza. When I say people, I mean, if you go to a shopping mall in Virginia or Maryland, or you go to a cafe in D.C., the people you're seeing are no more or less innocent than the people being massacred every day with U.S. weapons by Israel in Gaza. And the power of and the fear-generating clout of AIPAC and its allies, they are so powerful and cast such an ominous and leveraged shadow that, to give you an example, early this year, Senator Chris Van Hollen, along with Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley, Senator Van Hollen from Maryland, went to Gaza, went to the border crossing, and came back, and among other things, along with interviews, gave a speech on the floor of the Senate that denounced what Israel was doing, called out with no euphemisms, in no uncertain terms, that the Israeli government was then, and by the way, still is now, using food as a weapon of war and intentionally starving civilians in Gaza. And Senator Van Hollen said on the floor of the Senate that there was no doubt this was a war crime, and that the people at the top of the Israeli government were war criminals. Hours later, Senator Van Hollen voted in favor of shipping about $15 billion more of weapons to Israel. So how do we explain that? How can one of the most articulate members of the Senate, naming clearly the war criminality of the Israeli government from the top down, how could it be that he would denounce this horrific policy coming from the top of the Israeli government and then turn around and vote to send them billions and billions more of weapons? That is a question I think we really need to ponder.
Yeah, I mean, I can't agree with you more. I mean, it occurs to me that it's the power of groups like AIPAC that someone like Senator Van Hollen is concerned about, is afraid of, arguably. It's also the case that they have an opposition party, the Republicans, that will hammer folks like Van Hollen, like our presidential candidate Harris, very, very severely if they in any way cross the Israelis, the Israeli lobby. I mean, it's a manifestation, I think, of the power of money in politics, the problem of money in politics, that our system is so infected by money that congressmen, congresswomen are scared of the reaction if they in any shape or form cross the military-industrial congressional complex, Israel, or any number of other issues. I mean, it's a serious problem.
The reality is that we have a Republican Party now that is neo-fascist. It is in the thrall of and really run by Trump and his top coterie of advisors and operatives. And in past decades, the Republican Party was nothing to praise, but it has become so extreme and not only morally without any virtue, which is really saying something, but Orwellian and intellectually bereft of integrity, so that, you know, black is white, up is down, hot is cold. We might attribute this to the mentality of one person, Donald Trump, who makes stuff up all the time, lies all the time, flagrantly, whereas Democrats often lie less flagrantly. But what about the hundreds of Republicans in the House and Senate who, with very rare exceptions, are in lockstep with him? So that is a very real threat. And then, as we've discussed, the problems with the Democratic Party leadership, particularly in foreign policy, are in their own right very, very dangerous and damaging to human life, as the bipartisan support for military aid to Israel illustrates. David, you were talking earlier about Ukraine, and I want to mention that diplomacy has become a dirty word on Capitol Hill in a lot of contexts, unless there is the rhetorical nod to the pseudo-diplomacy of what the U.S. government is doing in the Middle East. But the fact is that a little over 2 years ago, shortly after the Russian invasion of Ukraine, there was a pretty close call opportunity to find a diplomatic solution to end the invasion and the fighting, it's well documented that then British Prime Minister Boris Johnson directly intervened, the U.S. government was involved, and the deal was killed. And it's not a stretch to say that the U.S. government in close to 2.5 years now has really been engaged in keeping this war going, refusing to engage in authentic diplomacy, which was the case before the invasion, which was preventable. Jeffrey Sachs, writing in the Financial Times before the invasion, pointed out, I think very accurately, that the United States government was not engaged in anything worthy of the name of diplomacy before the invasion. And I would add that when President Biden gave a news conference shortly before Russia invaded Ukraine, he was asked, Mr. President, do you support Ukraine joining NATO? And he said, well, if Ukraine wants to join NATO, that's their prerogative, which was a conscious missed opportunity to prevent the invasion. Just imagine the scenario during the Soviet Union if the Warsaw Pact had made overtures for Canada or Mexico to join that Russian military alliance. Can you imagine the response in official Washington? They would have gone ballistic, perhaps literally. But you know, this is part of the basic dynamic. Do as we say, not as we do. We get to call the rules. As I say, Secretary of State Antony Blinken and President Biden talk about what they call the rules-based order. What they really mean is we make the rules and we break the rules.
Right. I mean, I'm too young and you're too young to remember what the last straw was that drew the United States into World War One. It was the Zimmerman cables, where the Germans were trying to allure the Mexican government into an alliance with Germany against the United States, and that was the final straw, and President Wilson brought us into World War One. I mean, I don't think, Norman Solomon, you're defending the invasion of Ukraine by the Russians, and nor are we defending the attack on the Israelis on October 7th by Hamas. The point is that we, you know, the response is this massive military response, and that's what we're questioning, I think, and not understanding, how Russia, who lost over 20 million people in World War II, are feel threatened by Ukraine going into a NATO alliance. I mean, this is a paranoid country that has suffered egregious losses, that's threatened, and I seriously question, you know, this idea that Russia is going to, you know, once it takes care of Ukraine, is going to march on the west, on the rest of Western Europe. I mean, it's I don't know what the evidence is of that, and it's spurred on, I believe, by the egregious need for our military industrial complex to have a continual state of war. We need a boogeyman. Russia is it. By God, we're going to have it.
Oh, I completely agree with you. And as you say, of course, we should condemn the Russian invasion of Ukraine. We should condemn what was done on October 7th. saying that other countries have done something to be condemned doesn't let the United States off the hook, a country that has caused so much carnage in Afghanistan and Iraq and elsewhere, and now is part of the ongoing carnage in Gaza. And we could spend many hours talking about the U.S. role in recent years causing such havoc and suffering. So the question keeps coming back to, well, where do we go from here? And the answer is diplomacy. The answer is to get off our high horse and recognize that other people have a vested interest in their own futures, and nations have, whether we like it or not, their own sense of creating security and a geopolitical circumstance around their borders that they don't feel are threatening. And you mentioned events before our lifetimes, such as World War I. For some of us, the Cuban Missile Crisis is in our lifetimes. And 90 miles off the Florida coast, nuclear missiles were unacceptable in Washington. The U.S. has been placing supposedly defensive ABM systems in Poland, for instance, close to the Russian country, the country of Russia. And they can be retrofitted very quickly to be offensive nuclear missiles. These are realities that are abstractions for the punditocracy based in Washington, abstractions for the military and political power structure of our country, but they're the opposite of abstractions for people elsewhere.
Yep. We're going to have to, unfortunately, end it there. It's great having you on. I've been speaking with Norman Solomon, not Norman Ornstein. He's the national Norman Solomon is the national director of RootsAction.org, executive director of the Institute for Public Accuracy. His latest book is "War Made Invisible: How America Hides the Human Toll of Its Military Machine," and a paperback edition with a new afterword about the Gaza War will come out next month. Norman Solomon, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, David.
It's great having you. And we are here at WPFW. Just have a minute left, but we really implore you to give whatever you might be able to donate to this important community resource. WPFW, you can go online, wpfwfm.org. We accept PayPal, we accept your credit card, your debit card, or you can also call in 202-588-9739. We've got a minute left. What do you think, Miss Valencia?
Now is the time, everyone. Show is almost over. We need to reach our goal. You can join us in this effort. I know many of you are sitting at home. You have been wanting to do this. This has been on your mind. Now is the time. Pick up the phone. Visit us at wpfwfm.org and make that sustaining gift today. Thank you so much for your attention. We really appreciate you.
We're offering a different model here. We're not inundating you with commercials. I'm not watching TV very much. Not listening to commercial radio. When I do, I'm just like shocked at how people put up with the commercial.
Yeah, it crowds out all the content. You don't hear anything. The number of words on a station with no commercials, it's profoundly different.
Yeah. It's really different, and we're offering a different model here on Pacifica Radio. It's Pacifica. Started in 1949 in reaction to the Korean War. We're pacifists here. That is our orientation. That is our tendency versus the War Department, now called Defense Department. That's not what we are about. Please help us. Please support this important venue, which is WPFW 202-588-9739. 9739. We're going to sign off. Thank you so much for listening to this important resource, and have a good week. Take care.
Pacifica Radio, I'm Christina Onnested. The U.S., the U.K., and three European nations are calling on Iran to stand down its ongoing threats of a military attack against Israel. This as the U.S. is sending more naval vessels to the Middle East. A statement from countries including France, Germany, and Italy also said they discussed the, quote, serious consequences for regional security should such an attack take place. This comes after Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin more than doubled the U.S. Navy presence in the Middle East, ordering a guided missile submarine and a carrier strike group consisting of six naval vessels, some equipped with F-35 jets, to join another strike group of warships in the Mideast. The Biden administration Monday says it believes Iran or its proxies may launch a strike against Israel as soon as this week in retaliation for the assassination of a senior Hezbollah commander in Beirut and the assassination of Hamas's political leader Ismail Haniyeh in Tehran shortly after that, which Iran blames Israel for. Iran has rejected a call to refrain from retaliatory attacks. FSN's Nina Maria Potts has more.
The White House says it's preparing for what it called a significant set of attacks, echoing a similar warning from Israeli officials. U.S. National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby.
It's increasingly likely that there will be an attack by Iran and or its proxies, and perhaps in the coming days. I would tell you that we share those concerns. It is difficult to ascertain at this particular time if there is an attack by Iran and or its proxies, what that could look like.
I'm Nina Maria Potts reporting.
Cracks are widening in a public rift between Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Defense Minister Yoav Gallant, who repeated the idea Hamas cannot be eliminated in Gaza, and Monday condemned what he called Netanyahu's nonsense about total victory in the war. The latest spat shows growing discontent within Netanyahu's handling of the war in Gaza. Gaza's health ministry says the death toll from Israel's war is pushing 40,000, more than 39,900, according to a report from the WAFA News Agency. The United Nations Security Council, meanwhile, will discuss Israel's weekend strike on a school in Gaza City that killed more than 100 Palestinians, many of them children and women. Monday, the United Nations condemned the strike. Farhan Haq is a spokesperson.
The school-turned-shelter was reportedly hosting hundreds of displaced families, and people were performing the dawn prayer at the school's prayer hall. Casualties were brought to Al-Ali Hospital, which is one of the 16 hospitals that remain only partially functional in the Gaza Strip. The hospital is overwhelmed by this mass casualty incident amid shortages of medications, clean water, and beds. According to the UN Human Rights Office, this is at least the 21st strike on a school, each serving as a shelter, since the 4th of July. These strikes have resulted in at least 274 fatalities, including women and children.
Israel said it was targeting Hamas militants. Al Jazeera's reporting Hamas's armed military wing, the Qassam Brigades, has launched rocket strikes in Israel today. No casualties have been reported. The FBI says it's investigating allegations sensitive documents from Donald Trump's campaign were stolen in a cyber intrusion days after the campaign declared it had been hacked by Iran. The Associated Press is reporting the Biden-Harris campaign was also targeted, citing anonymous sources. The Trump campaign's claim came short shortly after Microsoft issued a report detailing foreign agents' attempts to interfere in the U.S. election. Meanwhile, three media outlets were leaked confidential material from inside the Trump campaign, but are refusing to reveal details about what they've received. Politico, The New York Times, and The Washington Post decisions stand in a marked contrast to the 2016 presidential campaign of Hillary Clinton, when a Russian hack exposed emails from the campaign manager, John Podesta, that was widely covered.